Daniel Perek, hey, before we begin, we need to understand a little bit about the background that makes this more understandable in context. First of all, the Sefer is written totally out of chronological order because later on we're going to find prokim that take place during the reign of Belshazzar, of Daniel's visions, things that he was given to understand in these visions about Achrit Hayamim and about the nature of the development of Malchut, which is very much part of the theme of the entire book. So that what happens is that we skip from the events that concluded with Nebuchadnezzar's letter and with his Tzidduk HaDin and with the insights of how grand and wonderful HaKadosh Baruch Hu is and looking forward to his Messiah and his conclusion of Malchut. And I think it's just kept on going, basically the way they were. And therefore we skip directly to the ultimate implications of those events as they are invoked once again at the last night of Malchut Bavel. But the broader sense of the history that's involved is that the story of Nebuchadnezzar begins with the Kalim of the Beit HaMikdash and the children from Yerushalayim that are brought. And the next story ends, the conclusion of Bavel, precisely 70 years after the coming of Nebuchadnezzar to the throne. It concludes the story of Bavel by directly addressing those issues, the Binyan Beit HaMikdash, the Kalim that had been taken, and the final positioning of the Chashivut of Daniel. Because of that, in a sense, everything in between is not important to that aspect of the theme. That's number one. The other thing that we need to understand is that there were various levels, just as there were in Mitzrayim, various levels of interpretation and possible kitzim, just as there are Bizmanenu, many possible kitzim, in which all those who were Tereach, the defined kitzim, expressed issues that really were changes and paradigm changes, and that had within them the potential for actually concluding the period of the Galut. We know that Mitzrayim, I mean, that's the model. And in Mitzrayim, we had the 400 years commutated to the 210 years, and that was the Mekapetzel HaGvaot, and the Memtet Shari Tumah, and all of the other issues that are brought out. And so, too, we have Bi'ita HaChishena in our current Galut. And the same thing was true above all. So true that, as the Gemara points out, Daniel himself is totally confused. And we'll see later on that he says, Ana Daniel, Binoti Bisfarim. And I was absolutely shattered. I mean, it looked like none of the Neviyut was coming true. The Shivim Shana that was supposed to be the end of the Galut. And so the Gemara goes through a whole work of understanding what really happened. But before we get to the Gemara, let's take a look at the Neviyut of Yirmiyahu as it applies to Bavel. And once again, we'll be struck by how central Bavel is and how much the story of Nebuchadnezzar that we just had really is important to our understanding of the Tekufa and the role that Bavel plays in this entire historical development. So first of all, this is in order of the Prakim of Yirmiyahu, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's in order, it's in conceptual order. So first, Yirmiyahu talks about Vayta kol ha'aretz hazot l'chorva l'shama. So all of these nations are going to be working for the king of Babel for 70 years, and they will be a tribute to him. At the end of 70 years, which is saying at the end of 70 years in which the Goyim worked for, worshipped, were in tribute to, were under the thumb of the Babylonian Empire. Then Efkod, now this is not the Efkod Etchem, which is a different pasuk, but I will be poked, so to speak, the avon and the time and count, what all petita means. It's a counting, it's a measurement, it's a determination of what needs to be done against the king of Bavel, the al hargoyahu, and on the entire nation, the umashem, et avonam, so I will bring their sin, the aleretz kastim, and I'm going to turn it into an absolute churban. There will be nothing left of that country. Now, at the beginning of Yehoiakim's reign, which there was a tremendous amount of false nevi'ut, that everything was going to be okay, and that the king of Bavel was going to be mashlim, they had nothing to fear, and so on. So Yirmiyahu is sent to make the following announcement. And if you listen carefully, you hear in it already shades of what happens in the story to Nebuchadnezzar. Anochi asiti et haaretz, et haadam ve et habehima. Asher al pnei ha'aretz, kochi ha'gadol, uvezroi ha'netuya, unetatiya la'asher yashar be'inai. Now this rings precisely of the things that Nebuchadnezzar had to recognize. For some strange reason, the Chayat Haaretz, he had to be given over into his hands, the Chayat Haaretz. The Navi says elsewhere, the Neil has to point out to him that the Chayot were given into your hands. And he has to turn into a Chayat. And I want you to know, the Avdu Oto Ko Aguim, this is not a small issue. By the way, it's not just the Chayot. It's the Chayot HaSadeh, which of course was central. V'ovdu oto kol ha'goyim, ve'et beno, ve'et ben beno. They will work for him, his son, his grandson, ad bo et arzo, until the time comes for his country. And before he didn't say anything, he just said, al melech bavel. Now we suddenly see melech bavel stretching into Eva Merodach, into Baal Shetzar. V'ovdu bo goyim rabim u'melachim gedolim. V'haya ha'goy v'amlamlacha, asher yavdu oto. At the Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel, any nation that attempts to avoid being enslaved by Nebuchadnezzar, will not put their necks into the yoke of the king of Bavel, then I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I will take action with the sword, with hunger, with plague against that nation that attempts to avoid the Nebuchadnezzar. I'll so weaken them that they're going to end up being in their hands anyway. So you might as well go with a smile. V'atem, and you guys here in this country, says Yirmiyahu, al tishmu el nevi'echem, don't pay any attention to these crazy nevi'im, the kosmechem, the chalmonechem, the onenechem, the kishafechem, sounds familiar. Asher him omrim aleichem lemor lo tavdu et melech bavel. They're all reassuring you. You're not going to be enslaved by melech bavel. Ki sheker em nivim lechem. It's all a lie. It's all a lie in order to destroy you and bring you into galut. Laman archik etchem mialad matchem v'idachti etchem v'avatem. Because had you agreed and become a simple province of Bavel, none of that would have been necessary. But you're not going to agree. You want to do it the hard way. And you'll end up there. But a goy asher yavi et tzavaro bo melech bavel vavado doesn't have to go into galut. V'hinachti v'al admato. That's what it's all about. So it's your decision. Two prakim later, well, we're talking already about the churban, ki ko amar Hashem, ki lefi melot lebavel shivim shana efkot etchem. Now here it says, lefi melot lebavel. It doesn't talk about the time, shivim shana, from the time that the goyim start being part of the imperium of Bavel, which took some time. It was Karkamish, it was Mitzrayim, there was a gradual development of Malchut Bavel over the north and then over the south and spreading until finally it became the power that we're recognizing here. So this, at the time that Bavel will be filled at Shivim Shana, that's when there will be a Pekidah. Ki anochi adati ata makshavot asher anochi choshev alechem. I know my plans, and they're all makshavot shalom, v'lo l'ra'ah. I don't plan bad for you. I only plan good for you. Okay. So first of all, the striking fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu relates to Nebuchadnezzar as the God who created the Chayat HaSadeh, and as the one now, this is not only I created et Adam v'et HaBeima pnei haaretz, but rather, Anochi natati et kol haaretzot el biyad Nebuchadnezzar melech bavel avdi, my servant, who will be doing what I want done. V'gam et chayat ha'sadeh natati lo la'avdo. I also gave him the animals of the field. What in the world? If we recognize that what we're talking about over here is essentially the end of the entire Nimrodian paradigm, in which it's possible to control from top down. And indeed the whole vision of the Tselem in the dream was the recognition that things cannot be controlled from top down. And indeed, as things get closer and closer to the earth, they become simpler and yet more and more the source of a broadened Malchut. Till even Malchut Mashiach ends up by destroying the bottom and growing up as a mountain from the bottom and filling the entire earth. It's a totally different vision. As we pointed out yesterday, it's the vision of Avram. To Nimrod's question, so what do you expect will happen, Mr. Abraham, when in fact we end up with all of these different countries and different ideas and so on, and when we get smart enough to be able to wipe each other off the face of this planet. Do you have any plans? Maybe at that point you'd like to make a United Nations or something, which I'm ready to do now. I mean, it's really a shame to have to go through all the nonsense till we get there. Hachacham einav berosho, wouldn't you say? And the truth is, Avram didn't really have a workable plan. His thought that it would be possible to bring the world to a state of a greater level of awareness in which people would mature to the point where lo yisak goyal goy cherev. I mean, who's interested in this? We have much more important things to do. It was an abject failure, even in his own lifetime. They ended up with 70 nefesh from the tens of thousands that had initially come to follow Avram. So it didn't work. And all of this time, it sure seemed like Nimrod was right. All of the Umot Olam, all of the Malchiot, anything that was successful. We're successful outside of Yisrael, except for such brief periods of David or Shlomo that just collapsed of their own weight because they were attempts to build from the top down. And that's exactly what it was that Yerovam pointed out the moment that Shlomo died. It can't work. Nobody's interested in this. Don't you understand? They're going to rebel just because of the taxes. This isn't being done the way it was done in the Midbar with the Kol Nadiv Lev and so on. You're trying to create things. This Beis HaMikdash can't last. This Malchut can't last. And indeed, the moment the people in the street hear that, they say, yeah, we don't want the taxes. We're not interested in conquering the world. We want to live in our own little world. The first time that there's any beginnings of an approach to Klal Yisrael's recognizing what the direction of the solution needs to be is the time that the Umot Olam also come to exactly that same recognition. The failure of the paradigm of doing things from top down is not replaced by some kind of idea. It's replaced by an evolutionary process. And therefore it's the beginning of Galut, therefore it's the beginning of the acceptance of randomness and Purim, and changes the concept of what a Beit HaMikdash is supposed to be, the place of miracles that have no place in the world from then on. Indeed, that's what we celebrate. As the Gemara says, Ayelat HaShachar, Sof Kol HaNisim, just as the Shachar, Sof Kol HaLaila, identifying miracles with night, with benightedness, as we would say in English, and with the need to have somehow God out there doing things for you. What needs to be established at the very beginning of such a period is that the achievements, and this is what Reb Yitzchak mentioned yesterday, the achievements of such an evolution can't go off floating away in the sky as if they didn't come from anywhere. And that means that the very beginnings of Avram Avinu, who was given Brit Milah as the beginning of a continuum in which biology marches on, in which the earth continues to grow from the bottom, was the very beginning of the issues that divided that original Nimrodian paradigm from the future paradigm. So indeed, we spoke about, it appeared to be crazy Gemara, I mean, Nebuchadnezzar with his erection, with his Arel equal 300, and then Shtei, Atavi, Arel. Now you understand that the real issue is Arelut. It really is. And what we're talking about over here is, and by the way, the next parak, is recognized across the world. It's an icon. It's the writing on the wall. It's an icon not only as a figure of speech, not only as beautiful paintings, but it's an icon in the sense of a repetitive theme in human events the moment that anybody gets high and mighty about how it is that we can deliver ourselves. There's always the writing on the wall. It's astonishing. I mean, even recently, you know, somebody got the idea of naming a spaceship, the Challenger, after Nimrod. No, it's such a beautiful scene. The entire world is watching, which is what happens over here, except there's no TV, so here they have to invite all of the leaders of the world to watch. Now, because it's bottom-up, the whole world's watching on TV. The great and wonderful Challenger, in which members of all of the nations can be represented. Where'd it go? What happened? There's some smoke? It couldn't be. It might be. It is. It just disappeared. Ro'av Yomar Ayo. It was a classic Titanic moment. Right? It's perfect. By the way, this is the 100th anniversary. Just selling tickets for going along exactly the same route. It's sold out, by the way. So it's not coincidental that the iconic end of the period should be a vision of, don't get too big for your britches. The ultimate top down. Right? It's not computers, it's the bugs that end up destroying the program. That's true. It's always the little things that are going to destroy you. So they happen to Challenger, obviously. But the point over here isn't the little things. The point is that there's a detachment. You're 100% right that this is one of the symptoms of the detachment. But it's a symptom. The underlying issue is the idea that it's possible to order things to one's design. That the issues underneath easily take care of themselves. That idea of when things take care of themselves, we only need to deal with the conceptual, with the migdal parer ba'avir, is so destructive across the board. The laws of unintended consequences, that's really the issue. You'll go ahead and everything makes perfectly good sense, but you're always, always going to overlook something central. And that's just a symptom. It's a symptom of not being completely attached to the makor of chokhma, to the makor of yesod ha-yesod ha-yesod ha-chokhma kulam. And that's what needs to be shown here. So if at the end of Malchut Bavel, which is the termination of the concept of Bavel, termination of Bikat Dura, the termination of Na'aseh Lanu Shem, the idea that it's possible to control, that technology itself would be capable of winning, that was very important to be the striking end of Malchut Bavel. And what happens here is not only that it becomes an iconic end, it's so beautifully done, because basically what happens here is that a misreading of what's going on in the Navi of Yirmiyahu allows the nationalistic feelings of Bavel to be linked directly to the events of the Beit HaMikdash as follows. It's been 70 years. Now, 70 years is a milestone, a tremendous milestone. It's the birthday of Bavel, the 70th birthday. As far as they're concerned, begins with the visions of Nebuchadnezzar and his ascendancy. As far as we're concerned, it begins a year later. But that's okay. They are convinced it's the 70th year of Bavel, and they make it true. In a sense, it really is true. So that in celebrating this birthday, they've also convinced themselves that the original Nevi'ut, which has granted 70 years to Bnei Yisrael. And remember, 70 years is not just, we don't pick it out of a hat. 70 years is a very natural human way of looking at a completed thing, because it's a completed life. Shivim Shana, that's the way in which people measure life, generally speaking. And that's what we say in the Pasuk. Yimei Shenotenu, that's the Shivim Shana. Shivim Shana LeBavel is clearly a moment of seriousness, a moment of celebration, a moment of hopefulness for the future, and beginning now our second childhood, the beginning of the next bar mitzvahs, and in three others, all this absurdity. But it's the same thing on a psychological level. They recognize that when the Navi had promised Shivim Shana to Bnei Yisrael of Galut, that too was a natural ending. Now, to them, the Beit HaMikdash, the Kelim of the Beit HaMikdash that had been brought, yes, it's true, they weren't brought the first year. He had to go down and take over Yerushalayim. But that's, it was just a simon, that we brought up the Kelim of the Beit HaMikdash. All along, there's always been this question. Is it about the Eloha, the Elohaz, the Gemara Menachos puts it, everybody recognized, including the Nebuchadnezzar, Elah. They're always talking about the one above. But in terms of human affairs, people love to believe that the more above God is, the less he has to do with human affairs. That's the whole Mishigas, really, of a Desura, because obviously it's precisely, anybody who thinks clearly, even in the simplest way, understands that the nature of being a makor of bria and a makor of existence, by definition, means that Elah is the source of anything that is taking place as part of the expression of existence. It's absurd to think of it differently. So the more we talk about an Elah, the more everything is seen as part, as an extension of Yesod HaYesod HaSvamut HaChachmot Kulam, as the Rambam puts it, is to know that there's a Matsui Rishon. Once you know there's a Matsui Rishon, it's exactly as idiotic as saying the most complex laws of nature couldn't have anything to do with the events that are taking place day to day. It's the exact opposite. The most primal laws of nature are the source of everything that's happening today. So how could that be? It's just a description of simple forces. That's all you need. And it's exactly the same thing when it comes to the more primal issues of existential realities rather than technical realities. And so here comes the moment at which the mistake is made. And it's such a powerful mistake that the celebration of 70 years of Bavel, once you see it this way, it's so clear how it was experienced, was linked directly to bringing out the Kelim of the Beit HaMikdash. Because if anything connected the first moment of Bavel to the now maturation of Bavel, it was those Kelim in the Beit HaMikdash, in which the Bavel vision ended up being more real, more down-to-earth, more important for all of the people on earth than the acknowledged God in Yerushalayim. And then the acknowledged Nevi'ahs, Nebuchadnezzar has no problem acknowledging. He always acknowledges. As a matter of fact, all of the Midrashim have him telling Hanani, Mishael, Azariah, hey, did you guys never read Yirmiyahu? Do you know what God said about people who don't accept when any quotes in these psukim? You're supposed to listen to me. What kind of business is this? They have to explain to him on what level the Malchut is given to him and on what level it isn't. Remember that Nimrod has a very important place in the history of that paradigm. He's the end of the 2,000 years. He's the end of the Asarah Dorot, essentially, that culminate in Avram. They join. The moment that Avram is exactly at the point where he's able to leave and to begin his movement, that is just 4 years after the actual events of the Dor HaAvraham. 2000. So in other words, he actually saw the Haflagah. And then by the time it's HaNefesh HaShel Asur B'Charan, it's now the year 2000. He was born in 1948. Okay. But what was unique about that period, of course, was the fact that the recognition of Orla was paradigmatic. In the sense that, as the Zohar puts it, the discovery of Noach was his connection to the Chayot HaSadeh. If you take a look at the Brit with Noach, and this is the culmination of the Brit of the Sheva Mitzvahs, the Brit with Noach was about flesh, not about humanity. It was about being part of a food chain. It was about eating animals. It was about being drunk. It was about loving the earth, as the Gemara puts it, for the sake of the earth, without needing any type of justification. It's not that I don't recognize that I'm an animal. On the contrary, I revel in being an animal. That means that the Brit of the Keshet, remarkably, because we know that Keshet is very nogea Yosef, is what's another word for penis, but it's not a circumcised penis. That's the point. So the Brit of the Keshet is similar to the Brit of Botzer of Avraham, but it doesn't want to go further. It doesn't see that there's a relationship between the Botzer element of ourselves and the further development of humanity. They're not linked, exactly the issue that happens over here. They remain unlinked. This is the end of that period. So that Nimrod's grand ideas, the Dasalot of Shame, and this is the Ben Benosh, or Nimrod HaRasha, as the Gemara identified him yesterday in Chagiga, brings now with his own grandson. And most hold that Baal Shatzar is indeed the Ben Benosh that the Navi speaks of here, even though he's constantly referred to as his son. And Rashi, in fact, says he is his son. It's Evel Merodach and he were, both of them were sons. The consensus of Chazal and the Mefarshim is that Baal Shatzar is third generation, not second generation. There's many places where we find that somebody's called son, despite the fact that they're grandson, because of the B'nai Bani, especially when the entire Nevi'ahs was him and his son and his grandson. That's the point, is that it's a dynasty that is all seen as part of Nebuchadnezzar. So we stand here at a very, very important historical moment. And it's a moment in which, because of its importance, exactly what we saw before, that Nebuchadnezzar is able to speak, and Nebuchadnezzar is amazing, and he's going to drown out the words of David HaMelech, and as the Medrash puts it, I mean, in one pasuk, this guy has put already in all the ideas of Sefer Tehillim, all the way up to Tzidek Adin. This is outrageous, and so on. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu to him, you're such a rusher. Just yesterday, what did you say? He said, "Man hu Eloha diyishtazivun min teyadi." What God could possibly save you? So what does it take in your little brain to turn it on to poetry like David HaMelech? Zachshava taomer kilusai. Actually, I'm not interested. Lo becha v'lo bekilusecha. Mi ekalseni Yisrael. Am zu yatzarti li tilati yisaferu. Not you. And this is the same idea. because the kilus is not a function of building beautiful buildings and playing Bach. That's not kilus. That's just a beautiful symphony. It has nothing to do with my kilus. It's your kilus. Because as long as you are worshiping your projections, your music is nothing but part of those projections. It says nothing to me. So I'm not interested in that kind of kilus. And that distinction between the productions of a human being that go beyond and are disconnected with his self goes all the way back to Maisa Bereishis, in which the problem in Maisa Bereishis, the source of the problem, is the fact that trees produced fruit without the fruit having anything to do with them. The Tama Eitz was not Ketama Pri. From that, what appears to be insignificant beginning on the third day of Maaseh Bereishit, comes, as Rashi says, the Chet of Adam HaRishon, because that was the reason that the earth was Nitkalel, was because Adam is Nitkalel. And it's clear that the main problem in the human condition is that breakdown, which is why when we get all the way to the end of Torah Shebaal Peh, which is the tikkun of all that needs to be mitukan, the last mesechta begins with Uketzin, which as the Mefarshim say, when is the eitz that's mechubar to the pre have a din of the pre and not of the eitz? Because that, in fact, is the end result of das. That's why, as we pointed out before, taharot is called das. That's chokhmat v'das. So in the end, unless we solve that problem, and of course each and every one of us suffers profoundly from that problem, the ability to understand and to create and to see and to write music and whatever it is that we do, the unbelievable talents that are, when you put them together, as I put out so many times, humanity is not human. It's superhuman. When we see any person who excels in one particular aspect, you're telling me that Bach is human? You're telling me that the voice of a Kiri Takunada is human? You're telling me that an Einstein insight is human? I mean, I can see, I can stretch its humanity. You're telling me that people that can jump up in the air and flip over 15 times before they land, that's human? You're telling me that a guy that walks over to an animal and talks to an animal and the animal does whatever he says and listens to him and he understands instantly the psychology of the animal, that's human? To take all of those hundreds of thousands of impossible skills that people have. It's human for a mind to be able to think only in prime numbers, that the most massive supercomputers will take 3 years to figure out, that they laugh at it because it's a joke between them. They talk to each other in prime numbers. This isn't human. None of it's human. Put it all together in one human being, and what do you have? I mean, if anybody would see a human being like that, they'd be convinced you're talking about some alien life form. It's not possible. So the sum total of humanity is completely beyond humanity. And nonetheless, unless we solve the issue of the Tama Eitz Ketama Pri, we end up being incapable of sensing, even within our own sense, ourselves, any impact of these immensely superhuman powers on the realities of our day-to-day life. So we remain the same total idiots that we were in the beginning, doing the same idiotic things, except addressing them so that they become more dangerous, more damaging, more pernicious, hidden more under the surface, but they're always there. Until the grandest of all, Yeravam ben Nevat, who is head and shoulders above anything imaginable in his times, is reduced to the psychology of a two-year-old. So who goes first? But we're all like that. And that's basically the issue of humanity as a whole that needs to be addressed very, very slowly. And these iconic events are a grand help. Because whenever we hear about a Titanic, it's always a help to put things back into perspective and to try to rethink what indeed is this all about. And so this parak is the story of the sinking of the ship called Bava. And how it was that in the most marvelous Titanic way, while the bands are playing on the deck, and the captain is rewarding his loyal stewards, in this case, Daniel, with a golden chain around his neck, the iceberg looms a few hours away. Rabbi Barnea has a marvelous addition.
The 70 years of the ghosts of Bavel are a punishment for not keeping Shemitah V'Yovel. That's part of the count. And in Shemitah V'Yovel, you have to leave food for the animals of the field.
The animal and feels it defined the action of the food.
Of the food, otherwise I can't keep it for myself. And it also defines the regions of Eretz Yisrael divided up. If in this region the animals don't have, you have to give up and take it out of your house.
But the conception is this conception. You're part of the earth.
You're part of the earth. You must leave for the animals. It's part of it not being yours.
Kalaretz.
So you took control and you didn't keep it.
Thank you very, very much for Barnea for that.
How are we to understand all of these, let's say, empires or some whatever kind of political construct you want to call them, which are themselves emergent properties of very random processes given by all sorts of conditions we can't even imagine, playing such a vital role in the evolution of I don't want to say Judaism or our history, whatever, which has like a certain transcendent quality to it. You see what I'm saying? It seems...
It's a fascinating thing. See, the problem is you're not old enough to have experienced this. But it's very interesting that as you look across life, if you live for a few generations, you're struck by the remarkable... Well, a generation is only 20 years, right? You're struck by the remarkable way... Yeah, you're struck by the remarkable way in which, to you... time is completely speeded up, and you only see the most salient issues. In other words, let's say you'll have grandchildren. Now, you'll see those grandchildren, let's say, once a month, twice a year, which means that just like in a speeded up shot of a flower opening, they appear overnight as full-fledged adults. It is shocking to you to realize that they have actually experienced a lifetime during that period, and that all of those events that to them are so rich and have gone through so many different things, to you took place in an hour. And that all you see is the reason. And you understand that somewhere buried in there, I mean, they must have learned how to talk since they now sound like Shakespeare. Or they must have they must have learned how to write, and they must have learned how to think. And you understand that a lot goes into that. But in a sense, it's irrelevant. It's the picture that is so immensely powerful. And the same thing is true of Klal Yisrael. We sit back and we look at 6,000 years of history on the palm of our hand. Nobody else does this. Because they don't have that awareness of history. They don't have a modality by which there are certain events that can stand out in exactly the same way that your own descendants will stand out, you see? So it's to them, it's history is irrelevant. It's completely disconnected. It's remarkable. It's that experience that I had in the British Museum that was so unbelievably powerful to me. Where to me, because of coming as I am of a Ben Yisrael, you're in this museum that 100 million people visit a year, you know, and you'll see a little tiny piece of broken, shattered pottery that had a message on it, and you'll burst into tears because this is yesterday. And they'll look at you like, what is so moving about this? You know, this is your self. This is your history. It's Nogea today. It's not a study that you have. And everyone else will look at the most astonishing things and they'll say, wow, that's interesting. Oh, that's really impressive. Without having any sense of that. It's unbelievable. To us, to stand in Nebuchadnezzar's castle, or to stand in Sancheirib's castle, this is crazy. It's unbelievable. It's the most, you could sit there with your mouth open and barely catch your breath, right? So that each piece makes sense and is it's real, completely real. It's not about the past. It's about the present. And that is the beauty of the paradigm that's given by Torah, is that it enables you, through the perspective of the Miut and Ketuvim, it enables you to hold the world in the palm of your hand. So for us to be able to see and to go from Avram Avinu's Kivshana Esh with Nimrod directly to Nebuchadnezzar's Kivshana Esh with Daniel, and to understand that the events are so completely related, and that they, in the middle, of course, there's the other Esh, and the Hanani Mishav Azariah, and the Yehuda, and the Yosef, and how these were embedded in the original questions, and what it was that Noach was doing with the animals, and the fact that he's with the animals. These aren't Werther. They're just obvious flows. They're exactly what's going on. There's the things that are happening in the world. And of course, it's not only the stories in Tanakh. It's everything that happens is linked as these events that you hold in the palm of your hand. The development of various philosophies, of various empires, of the central ideas. Obviously, it's immensely rich in detail. But that's true of any field. I mean, if you wanted to learn medicine by actually learning the details of every system that you're learning about, you'd have to live 100,000 years to have any sense of the overall picture. All that we ever try to do is hold the picture. Then we understand it'll take 100 million human hours to discover the mechanism of this particular breakdown and everything that goes into it. Now we understand, okay, out of that 100 million hours, one guy will be the guy who suddenly sees it and puts it together. He'll get the Nobel Prize. But it took 1,000 years of research till that actually came out. You know, that's clear to us. Of course it's endlessly and hopelessly rich. This is the silly anti-Darwinism, you know, Darwin's black box, as if you have to understand where it is that each element, we have no idea what the mechanisms are.
Because of this issue?
Funny, it's on a roll. You got to write your own book on this. I can't keep up. Just like Lo Yevatzer Me'emet, there's a sense of humor that's associated with that. There is something very humorous about the sinking of the Titanic. No, I mean, it's humorous because, I mean, it's so ironic. It's just so, the ship that can't be sunk. The great challenger. It's funny. It really is. And the way the Chazal put it is actually, "Kama mu'urvav schok shesachak midat adin." How ironic is that lovely laughter of midat adin, which we call the Yitzchok schok. That was laughed at the Dor HaMidbar, at the Dor HaMabul. That laughed at the Dor HaFlaga. Everything looks great, and everybody's happy. Beep. And we terminate the happiness. Even the Medrash in the beginning of Shmini, unfortunately, it's the same thing. Here is Elisheva, the happiest woman on earth, four smachot in one day, beep, terminate. And so, exactly at the moment of the greatest joy, 70 years to Bavel, victory over our enemies, Bavel forever, thank you, O Lord of Wood, Ba shaita nafaka etzba'am diyada nash. At that very moment came the palm of the hand. Now you cannot say, if you say yada in Aramaic, it means the entire arm and the hand. So in order to indicate a hand as opposed to an arm and hand attached, you have to say the finger part of the hand. That means, it doesn't mean that we just lose fingers there, not being attached to a hand. This is the way we say hand. So the hand, a human hand, appears in midair, uchatvan kobel nevrashta, and writes right where the spotlight is on the wall. This became the modern Hebrew word, the nevrashta, which we use for the chandelier. So right at the, underneath the chandelier, where everybody would see it, al gira dichtal, right on the bright white plaster of the wall of the Hechala de Malka of the king's palace, Umalka Chazay, the king, is watching this hand moving in midair, pas yada dikatva, and he is not very happy. Adayin Malka, and at that point, the king zivoi shanoi, the look on his face sort of turned awfully frightened. Varayanoi evalune, and his thoughts terrified him. Vikitrei charzei mishtaryain. Now this is all part of the funniness of it. I mean, this guy, and so yes, his belt falls off because he's holding in his stomach so much. Ah, and his stomach falls out, and so his girdle falls off, and his knees start knocking. You see, arkuvate dalada nakshan, his knees. That way we get this idea of this really Poe-like descriptor. Blah, 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 blah. And he's sitting there, karamakol b'chayal. He screams. To call all of his magicians and his demonists. And when I get there, he tells them, any human that can read what it says here, and who can tell me what that means, he will be dressed in our Givana Yilbash, which is a sign of giving him the Congressional Medal of Honor, when he'll be given the control of additional provinces. So he will be dressed in this beautiful red velvet. And Haminika Didahava Tzavar is going to get this beautiful Olympic medal around his neck. And there's your trinkets for the day. And Vitalti Malchuta Yishlari will be ruling over a third of my kingdom. Oh, that was a nice offer. Adayin Alim Kol Chakimei Malka. And so all of them come in and they're all investigating this and they've got their little magnifying glasses, laser detectors, and so on and so forth. But Lo Chahalin Ketavala Mikre Ufishre Lo Adala Malka. They could not interpret what, they couldn't read it. And they certainly couldn't explain it. Dain Malka Belshazzar Sagi Mintbahal. And so at that moment, King Belshazzar terribly much was terrified. And even worse, did Zivoi Shadayin Aloi, did he turn green, or his face turned, was contorted. Veravanai Mishtabshin, and the confusion reigned among all of his nobles. Because he was convinced that the very fact that it couldn't be read meant that there was nothing to do about it. In other words, if it was a message, he can act on the message, but it's not a message, and it's just a twilight zone, then it's awfully scary. They're coming to take you away, was the sense that he had. And this was not something he was going to be able to respond to. And at that moment, the Malkita, this is the real queen. Now, some learned that if before we mean the Shigalte was the Malkita, so maybe they had left the room and then they were called back. The Malkita, but actually many of the Mefarshim, and there's no question from the context in my mind that this is the truth, that the Malkita over here doesn't mean the queen. The Malkita means the queen mother. Just like we find by Shlomo Malach, Imasha Malchut, the reference to in that case, it's in the reference to Ruth, not just his own mother. But over here, it means Reb Nebuchadnezzar's wife, really, as we'll see, because she, and there's a great deal of meaning in this, because what's actually happened, if we're correct in suggesting that this is closure, the only way to have this closure is for someone objective to bring up the way that this relates back to what happened in Nebuchadnezzar's time, and to reinsert Daniel back into the story with this gap of 30 years in between the previous parak and this parak, so that we can understand that she sees the need for closure. And at the very closure, and at the very moment that the issues are being brought up that revolve around the Beit HaMikdash, its destruction or the danger of its being rebuilt, how ironic, again, that the only one that can give any interpretation was the Jew that came with the very kelim that they're bringing. And now, at the age of 80 or whatever, I mean, depending on how we understand, but he was an old man at this point. Now he's being brought, the same little boy as a teenager, is being brought now for the grandson to explain to the grandson the facts of life, just like he did to the grandfather, and to put it all together so that the only one, this gives a completely new insight into the first parak, the only one who was there from beginning all the way through the end was Daniel, who is, of course, compared to Noah, same way. So that, once again, it takes us back to that story. So we need the Malkita. The Malkita is the one that really provides us the perspective from Bodo's point of view to what's happening. So the Malkita sees the scene and she realizes that something, I mean, the king's falling apart and, something's got to be done. So she says, as she hears all of this, so Kobo Mile Malka Varavravanoi, in light of the things that were going on, this Lakobo is always the best thing in Aramaic because it means everything, you know, in light of considering the fact and so on and so forth. So, in light of what was happening to the king and to his noblemen, she goes into the Beit Mishtaya Alat. She goes right in the middle of this party. Anat Malkita, Anat means she makes an announcement, which everybody has to hear this. Ve'amerit, Malka, le'almin chayi. Don't worry, you shall live forever. Ha'yevaluch rayonach, let not your thoughts so disturb you. Ve'zivach ha'yishtano. Don't let yourself fall to pieces like this. You happen to have exactly the right man in your kingdom. To Ruach Elohim Kadishin Be, who has the Spirit, the Holy God in him. Uviyomi Avuch, and in the days of your forefathers, Nahiru Vesachlatanu Vechokma, Kechokmat Elohim Ishtakachat Be, light, understanding, wisdom, as if it was the wisdom of God himself, was discovered within him. And your glorious grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar, was smart enough to appoint him, Malka Nebuchadnezzar, Avuch, Rav Chartumin Ashpinkas da Ingos Rin Hakime Avuch Malka. Father the king made him in charge of all of these low-class know-nothings. And he is the only one that ought to be here. And if you know that there's a way out of this, hold on. Help is close. Press the Daniel button. Break in case of emergency. Kol Kabal, we're back to that again. In light of the fact the Ruach Yetira Oman Da Visachlatanu, in light of the fact that this additional spirit of insight, understanding, Mefashar Chelmin, the man has proven himself in the interpretation of dreams, the Achavayat Achidin, this man is able to undo all paradoxes, Umeshore Kitrini can untie all knots, Ishtakacha Bebe Daniel. That was what was found in this man. The Malka Sam Shemei Balshazzar, and the king decided to call him after the name of God, Balshazzar, Ki An Daniel Yitkare Ufishrei Yahachave. Daniel shall be called and shall tell you the interpretation. Bidain, Daniel Hual Kana Malka, and so at that moment Daniel was brought in front of the king, Ane Malka Ve'amar Le Daniel. And so the king proclaims, saying to Daniel, unto Daniel, the min b'nei galuta de Yehud, the hayeti malka avim in Yehud, you are that Daniel who came from the galut of the Jews that my father dragged out of there. I did hear a couple of good things about you, but don't get too hachi-tachi. Shamayit alay. Of course he knew. Or either he's making himself not know, or this is a statement. So machlokas how to read it. So in A, this could be, are you Daniel? Or an announcement, you are Daniel? Or are you Daniel? Again, it depends. There's different Jerushmas. Are you Daniel? Then it's a put down. I heard some things about you as if you didn't know. Correct, but that doesn't matter. It's always has to be introduced that way. It's not as if I'm going to actually come on to a Jew. But, I mean, your father did. And your grandfather appointed him in charge of the whole country. He couldn't be that bad. So it could have been just a politic thing to do and to say. So there's different approaches in the Mefarshim. Shimeita Allah, I've heard the Ruach Elohim Bach, that you have the Spirit of God in you. V'nahiru v'sechletanu v'chokhmah yatirish takachat bach. And great light, insight, wisdom, understanding has been found of you, in you. U'chaan hu'alu kadamayach ha'kimaya ashpaya. Now, before you came in here, you know, we've had all of these people in here, the Chachomim and the soothsayers, and they've been trying to their luck on this thing over here. The Ketafah Adonai Yikrun, they're supposed to be reading what it says over here. Ufishrei lo da'utani, and to let me know what it means, and they don't want anything about it. V'chalin pshar milta la'achavaya. They can't understand one word to explain it over here. I don't need these guys. V'ana shemet alachna, I've heard about you. That you're able to figure out riddles and you can take any complex knot and untie it into its part. And now I would say that Ki'an, in Tikul, if you are able to Kitava Lemikra, to read this Katava, Ufishrela Da'atini, and let me know what it means, I am going to give you something marvelous, which of course is hilarious because this guy doesn't live out the night, but he's going to give him the kingdom. It reminds you, reminds you of the story of Ashbedai, who burst out laughing when he overhears this guy yelling at a shoemaker. He said, I need the boots to last 7 years. Darn it, 7 years guaranteed. He burst out laughing. Shlomo asked him, Benayo asked him, what's so funny? He says, this guy's less than a week to live. What did he choose for 7 years for? So it's like, Daniel's looking at this guy like he's out of his mind. You're on the deck of the Titanic, and you're rewarding me with free trips for the next 3 years on all Titanic's. Thank you very much. And I'm going to give you one third of my non-existent malchut. B'malchuta tishlat. But Dain Ane Daniel Vamaka the Makal. And at that moment, Daniel said in front of the king, why don't you keep your little toys, will you please? Matatach lachlev, you take the toys. You keep these gifts. And Nevis Beyetach Leacharon Hav, you're welcome to give it to whoever you like. But I'm perfectly happy. You don't need to reward me. I'm perfectly happy to read this for you. And to do you the favor of letting you know what it says. Baram Kitavaya Krei Lamalka. Ufishra Ahud Inei. However, in order for you to properly understand this, it needs a little bit of an introduction. And don't take this wrong. I mean, I really do think you're a great king. Ant Malka Eloi Elam Achut or Avut of Yekara Bahadara Yahavet and Vuchametzer Avuch. Let's just put everything into its proper perspective. The Lord above gave kingdom, he gave power, he gave glory, he gave beauty to your father, Nebuchadnezzar. Umin revuta diavle, and from that grandeur that was given to him. Now, there was absolutely no entitlement over here. I hope you understand this. But from this gedula that was given to him, kol amamaya umaya velishanaya havu zayin utachalin mekadamoi. They were terrified, they were in awe of him, because the Avit Save Avit Katev, the Avit Save Avit Mache, look, he could do whatever he wanted in the world, went around thinking he was Mr. Big Boss. Whoever he decided to kill, he would kill. If ever he decided to beat up, he could beat up. He wanted to fix someone up and give him a parnasa, he could. The Avit Save Avit Marim, it's all up to him, you know, who he wishes he could uplift. The Avit Save Avit Mashpil. So he thinks of himself as God, you know. And so, as his heart got higher and higher, and he got a little too big for his britches, and he was driven to become an actual mezid, to think he could do whatever he wants. Well, we had to teach him a little lesson. He was removed from the seat of his kingdom. V'yikara hediv minei, and you may remember that all glory was taken from him. And worse than that, b'nei anashat arid, it was removed from humanity. U'levaveim chevatash aviv, and his heart became the heart of an animal. V'im aradaya midore, he lived with wild asses, let's say it like it is. Ispa kitori ta'amune, they would feed him, the kind of animal feed that you give to oxen. And his body was washed with the dew of the skies until he realized that there is a God above who rules over the kingship of humans. And it's not what he's giving, Mr. Nebuchadnezzar. It's what God is giving. And the one that he wants to give it to. That's who is put into the throne of kingdom. The aunt, and now you come along, Bray, his son, Belshazzar. Seems the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, you know? Loish Bed Livavach, I mean, you had who to learn from, and you're just as arrogant as your old granddad. Kol Kabel de Kol Denaya Dat, didn't they? I mean, taking into consideration that you knew all of this. I mean, it'd be different if you're just, or let's not pretend you don't know who I am and you don't know what happened. You know perfectly well, deep down, you know this history very well. And like an idiot, Almore Shemaya Itromanta, to go, and to go directly face to face with God. Brilliant. Ulamanaya Diveta Etif Kodomach, and you bring out the Kalim from his house. And then you, Ant Varav Ravanach, and your noblemen, and Sheglatach, Ulechanatach, they all chamra shatayin bahon. They all drink in those kelim. And to gods of gold and silver and brass and iron and wood and stone, dilo chazayin velo shabin, who cannot see, who cannot hear, velo yadin, who have no brains and who cannot understand, shabachta, like a bunch of animals sitting there praising a piece of wood. And to the God who holds your very breath in his hands, who keeps every last bit of your path in life in his hand. He you forgot about. That you could afford to ignore, of course. Yeah, very nice. And so, so just as a little joke, he decided to send you a message. Sent a human hand. And wrote you this little message. Now I'm going to read it to you. Now, this is the message that is written here. Now, why they couldn't read it. So there's many Purushim in the Gemara, what had happened. There was obviously written in some kind of code. So first it was written apparently in Ashurit, which was not very common. Okay, nonetheless, they could have been able to figure it out. But, as the Gemara says, one number is written in Atbash, which is very significant because Bavel is always referred to as Sheshach. And Sheshach is in Atbash. So there's something about the inversion, which of course the whole concept of Aramaic being an inverted, a bastardized version of Lashon HaKodesh. So the Atbash is important in Bavel. And I mean, the pshat that is most lovely is that it was simply written in letters that ran top to bottom, so that it was actually a word gap game. So you had to read, really, every fifth letter. The Marshal understands that you had to read the letters going down, which it said Mem Nun Aleph, Mem Nun, so it's Mimtas instead of Mena Mena. That's where Rabbi Yochanan understands that other codes are offered by others. First letter inverted, then the last letter brought there from, whatever. They couldn't figure it out. V'nanak tava dirishim. Now here's what it says. It says, Mnei, Mnei, Tikal, Ufarsi. And here's what it means. Denap Shar Milta. Mnei, Mnei means, the Malbim learns this so beautifully. The Mnei, Mnei is one Mnei. There were different ways of counting. You could have had more time. What a shame. But your Malchut has been counted, numbered. So Mnei, Mna, Elahana, Malchutach. God has counted the years of your Malchut. Vahashloman, you're not terminated. Beep. The next word is tekel. Now, you see, there was a chance, and I needed you to know that because, I mean, what's the big deal? Everybody's got to go sometimes. But you were weighed, really. You had an opportunity. Tekel means you've been weighed. Tekel te bemoznaya. So you were weighed in the scales of justice and, unfortunately, came out a little bit too short. Hishtakachat chasir. Too bad about that. And the next word is preis. Preis means your malchut has just been shattered. So prisat malchutach, ufarsin means it was given into two pieces. So it was yavitu of all things paras, which of course means the half malchut. So parasu madai, which of course means to be modate, which gets back to mana. So if there's even a remez to the malchiyot that it's coming to, manei manei tekal ufarsin, is itself a reference to the way that the malchut is no longer integrated and it has to be split. And indeed was shared in various ways, as the Gemara said, minan malchi, minan chafarchi, and they had to split things up. And it was given to Madai Ufaras, everything that your grandfather wanted to avoid. All the things that you thought were givens. Bidayin amar bal shitzar. And at that point, of course, bal shitzar recovered very rapidly. Yes, lovely, lovely interpretation. Bring, please, the golden medal of honor. And bring him his robe of beautiful argaman. After all, the man has done a good job. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, let's give him a big hand for Mr. Belshitzar. And so, he was malbish, ledanil, argivana, put him on his little medal, v'amnicha didahava al tzavare, and announced that he is now the ruler over one third of the malchut. Unfortunately, that very night. That was the end of him. And that night, he died. How did he die? So this is all fascinating stuff. Because what exactly happened to him? Well, it turns out that the guys that were originally in charge of the king's personal watchmen were two kids. This was the time of Nebuchadnezzar, two kids by the same names of Daryavesh from Modai, and Koresh from Poraz. And, yeah, they were royal guards. When Nebuchadnezzar went insane, they were the ones who administered the royal patch every day. You know, and they washed off his body and, you know, tried to... So they were the madness of King George, psychiatrists. Not exactly calculated to bring deep and abiding type of respect for the Malchut. And they were right there this whole time. And so, actually, I mean, according to the Medrash, they were really born on the very day that Nebuchadnezzar had come and taken Yachin. So it started way back then. Then they grew up enough to be able to be the administrators of the patch. And there's a lot of stories. There's just a lot of stories that are not only in Midrashim. They're found in Herodotus, and they're like all over, because it's very strange. How did Belshazzar disappear in a night? Was there a battle? Was it seems to be a takeover that was completely peaceful? So there's different myths about this thing. That while they were celebrating and everybody was drunk, one of these classic, that the battle that had been won, they managed to regroup, and Koresh and Dayovish came together, and they attacked in the middle of the night, and they sliced everybody up, and that was the end of the party. Okay, so it was just like a small takeover, you know, knock out 1,000 of the Rav Rabinoi and Belshazzar. But there's cuter stories. You know, one story is, after listening to Daniel in there, they decided, this guy's finished anyway. So what better thing to do, say some of the Rav Revanohi, than to bring his head to Koresh and Daryovish? That's another pshat. Another pshat has it that Koresh and Daryovish, this is the Bedrash Shirashim, and Koresh and Daryovish were still the royal guards. And Belshazzar told them, after hearing the thing from Daniel, he became rather paranoid, obviously. He says, tonight, nobody, nobody, and I mean nobody, gets into the palace. I don't care if he says he's the king himself. Just smash his head in on the spot. Well, Belshazzar wakes up in the middle of the night with horrible diarrhea, rushes out to his outhouse, and on the way back in, they say, who is there? He says, it's me, the king. Wait a minute, says one to the other. Didn't the king say that if somebody says he's the king, you're supposed to smash his head in? Now, the thing is, as the Medrash points out, but it says that there was still another day left to the Malchut of Belshazzar. And it refers to him as a... There's a Machlokus over there that he was lying in his blood like a dog. What exactly happened? And there's a Machlokus, what exactly happened. There's only one person, only one Madiyama. He was left bleeding out there the entire day until he finally died, so that he did have that last wonderful extra day of his malchut. And that's the idea of the Bei Belaila, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't leave for a second. In other words, the moment, as we say, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not machlis afilu kechuta sa'ara, from one malchut to the other. So once we were moneh in this fashion, and now you've been terminated means you've been terminated. So he needed to be terminated, but on the other hand, the Malchus hadn't been terminated, had to run through the day. It was already after midnight. So, I mean, how's that going to happen? So they had to let him bleed to death the whole night. And the other Mandiyamar says, it's not that he bled to death. He was spazzing all day. So the entire day, Hayam mefarfer kol ha'uyuma. See, that last day that was required for being mashlim the Malchut of Bavel. And this was the Midah Keneged Midah. They said, Yashvu le'eretz yidamu ziknei b'nei Tzion. And that's exactly, ziknei bat Tzion. That's exactly what happened to him. Kos b'yad Hashem. And then they had to lie, Rediyu shavi el afar. And that's what happened. He lied there in the dirt all day. Nobody even bothered looking what was happening with him and so on. And so, from the grandeur of his rewards to Daniel an hour or two before, he landed up in a filthy bathroom, lying in his blood and spazzing all night from a smashed in the head. And so much for the gifts of kings.